Welcome to another episode of Focal Point. My name is Chris DeBoer, and I am the Executive Director of Reformed Perspective Foundation. And on today's episode, I want to explore Black Lives Matter, that slogan and the organization behind it. Christians cannot support the Black Lives Matter organization. It's an abortion-supporting, LGBT-agenda-pushing organization that is entirely unchristian and unbiblical. The death of George Floyd in May was met with chants across the U.S. and in other countries too that Black Lives Matter. And this cry is undeniably true. And it resonated with Christians and many young people, leading actually very many Christians to join in marches and to black out their social media pages in solidarity for that movement. But as clear as it is that Christians must not be racist and must fight against this sin, what I want to delve into in this podcast is why the organization Black Lives Matter cannot be supported in any way, and therefore we can't even use that slogan anymore. Let's take a closer look. To begin, the entirety of the movement is based on a blanket assertion that by simply being black, a person is oppressed. The claim is made that there aren't just individual cases of discrimination, but rather there is something they call systemic racism, that racism is a feature of and built right into the whole fabric of our culture and institutions, both public and private. It's important to understand that there could well be evidence of systemic racism or other individual racism, but the first step to addressing problems is identifying them and being specific about it. Where there are specific examples given of racial injustice, we can then work to find specific solutions. For example, if police are targeting black drivers in expensive cars or for driving through a rich neighborhood, that would be racial profiling. And that would be wrong. And this specific problem would require a specific solution, such as restricting police officers' ability to pull over vehicles without evidence of just cause or probability. Or if black people are being killed in no-knock police raids, operations where the police break down the door without first identifying themselves, this specific problem could also be addressed with a specific approach that might involve completely re-examining this practice. To be sure, widespread systemic racism has existed, with laws in the U.S. that restricted where blacks could sit or eat, or even what water fountains they could use. And examples could persist in certain institutions today. But those laws are now gone. And for many years, there has been an effort towards affirmative action, both codified by law or de facto affirmative action, that is, local hiring policies, opening greater opportunities for historical minorities to have a better chance for post-secondary education or certain jobs. And we could explore the pros and cons of affirmative action in a future article, but the point here is only to note it was certainly an effort to address systemic racism and to provide increased opportunities for those whose opportunities may have been lacking. Unspecified claims of systemic racism suggest that it is intentional and state-sponsored, that the cultural power elites have set up a system where they can continue to suppress any opportunity that black people or members of other racial minorities could have of empowerment. How they account for the many successful and middle-income members within the black community is not very clear. They don't fit the victim narrative, and their success seems to be either ignored or they themselves are attacked as sellouts, as Larry Elder highlights in his new documentary, Uncle Tom. The idea of systemic racism does not allow much room for individual success for black people, and any example of such success isn't allowed to counter the narrative of oppression. What does systemic racism look like today? That is a topic that needs to be investigated further. Because what some are claiming to be examples of systemic racism could arguably be demonstrated to not have anything to do with race at all. But I digress. The point I'm trying to make is that we can address specific problems with specific solutions. In contrast, it is impossible to fix nebulous, unspecified problems, especially with riots and looting. Now, why we should not support the Black Lives Matter organization becomes clear when we take a closer look at what this organization supports, their statement of faith, as it were. You can find this on their website under What We Believe. They profess, "We are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift Black trans folk, especially Black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence." End quote. Well, of course, we confess and we believe that it is not a societal privilege when your sexuality and your gender match. It is healthy, natural, and normal. The Creator God made it so. It is possible that this division between gender and sexuality becomes normal language, even among Christians. And we must resist this entirely. We have to understand that we're up against the great deceiver. And he's prowling around like a lion seeking to devour. Right now, there's a battle going on for us and our children, and we need to equip ourselves and our young people with clear, unambiguous language about the created order. And where there is evidence of someone struggling with gender dysphoria, yes, then we must show empathy and compassion. We must be there to help. But by seeking to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift Black trans folk, the BLM organization is attacking what is good and celebrating what is broken. They boldly state, "Black Lives Matter fosters a queer-affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather, the belief that all in the world are heterosexual, unless she or he or they disclose otherwise," end quote. You see, the Black Lives Matter slogan has many people thinking that this is about racism. Now, to be sure, the organization addresses racism in its statement of faith, but the organization's focus is fixated on sexuality and gender identity, too. And by using charged language of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of, they are affirming that all those who are not part of that cultural elite, white, male, able-bodied, cisgendered, etc., all others then are oppressed. They hate the idea that heterosexuality is normative. Well, as Christians, we confess it is normative because of God's creation. We acknowledge in humility that there are indeed Christians who do struggle with same-sex attraction, and the church needs to develop greater empathy for such brothers and sisters. But that does not take away from the norms that God has established in creation. And as we look through that statement of faith, their radical anti-Christian intent becomes even more clear. I quote, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable." End quote. Well, the very foundational structure of civilization, and not just Western civilization, but all civilizations, is the family unit. And it is the Christian worldview that highlights the importance of fathers and mothers, both. God created both male and female in his image. God demands that children honor both parents, father and mother. And even the triune relationship includes that of father and son. While Christians express the importance of belonging to the communion of saints or to the extended family and village that collectively cares for one another, we stress at the same time the biblical truth that the primary responsibility for children are parents, both fathers and mothers. It is the task of both parents to train up their children in the fear of the Lord. You will also notice that Black Lives Matter mentions mothers and parents in this statement, but not fathers specifically. They are focused on ensuring they don't make any allusions to anything that could be remotely close to patriarchy. They would certainly object to Orthodox churches refusing to allow women to serve in the office of elders and deacons. They would object to asking a wife if they would honor, love, and obey her husband. Any language that suggests that a husband is the head of household would be forbidden. The Black Lives Matter slogan was strategically chosen. Who can disagree with it? Black lives do matter. And all people, especially Christians, must fight injustices, including racism. But we may not support in any way, shape, or manner the Black Lives Matter movement, which ties the slogan and organization so tightly together. We need to see that the driving force behind the Black Lives Matter movement is an organization that is entirely ungodly, unchristian, unbiblical, and wrong. It is a deceptive movement seeking to deceive whole nations of people in an effort to portray all the things God teaches us as right and good as being wrong and unjust. And their influence is seen everywhere, especially these days on the professional sports playing field. Maybe it's time for us to stop watching NBA basketball or NFL football, since these organizations have embraced the Black Lives Matter movement uncritically and ideologically. Maybe it's time we stop cheering and spending money on Black Lives Matter ideologues and their paraphernalia, whether that's pro sports or any other organization. Going forward, we will have to choose our words carefully. When we want to express how unjust racism is, we will have to find another way than to echo a slogan that is tightly linked to so much more than the words it says. Perhaps we can find a way to say that all people of all races are image bearers of God. We can no longer use Black Lives Matter because it implies that we agree with the organization and what it stands for. But we don't, and we can't. I want to conclude this podcast by suggesting that Black Lives Matter is not the root of a new tree. It is the fruit of a tree planted many years ago. The founders of Black Lives Matter are synthesizing instruction from those who have gone on before them, including Karl Marx and Saul Alinsky. One of the co-founders has even described herself and her colleagues as trained Marxists. In future podcasts, I hope to explore some of these foundational developments that have provided the fertile soil for Black Lives Matter and such other causes. It's my prayer that the Lord would help us to remain diligent in keeping His word, using it as a light to our path and shining the light of His word on the darkness around us. We are the salt and light in this world. Let's be sure we know what needs preserving and how to preserve it.